This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can he close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. We have a ton of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. And of course, what in the world is happening with Donald J. Trump, our president, right? And where are things going? You know, we're going to be talking in the third hour. We crossing our fingers with Chris Street. And we'll also be talking and bringing up a number of different subjects. One of them that's quite disturbing. There's two things that are very disturbing that's really breaking the news wires here at Agenda 21 Radio. One, the Oroville Dam is it's on life support, in my opinion, with what's going on up there with the spillway. It's a tragedy about to happen. And as the water level rises, because it's springtime and the snow melt, you can see what's going to happen. It's already above 823 feet, I believe, right now. Which means you're not very far from that 900-foot level, which is maximum pressure on the gates and on the spillway. And the spillway is leaking like a sieve. After $2 billion, it's still a leaking sieve. You would think that $2 billion later, they would be able to fix it, right? No, not at all. One of the biggest travesties in American construction history, I guess you can say, in building history, is $2 billion later, and it's not working at all. Big time leaks going on. It's flooding basically on the spillway. And you know, it's supposed to be completely dry. I mean, we have the pictures. We'll be putting them up and you be the judge on what's going on. And of course, the other big story that's out there is the trucking industry is slowing down. It's slowing down because there's nothing else to transport around America. And this has been news that's been coming to us gradually, and now it's sort of a cavalcade of truckers and other people aligned with the business telling us, you know, there is no more product, and 2 weeks is basically what we have to get things to the store. So don't be fooled when you go into the big box companies and you see all this product out there, because it's all about to disappear because there's nothing to replace it. In other words, this supply line out there is going to be setting off food fights, food riots. You can just see this sort of thing happening. It's already happening in some places where people, the food lines are extremely long because people have run out of money. They've run out of any means to get food. So, you know, who would ever think that that sort of thing was something that was happening in the great United States of America? But here it is. Okay, right now with us, though, I've got Malcolm McGough, who's featured in the article that we were just reading. Malcolm, are you there? Malcolm, are you there? Can you hear me? Malcolm, can you hear me? Malcolm, can you hear me? Let's try this. Malcolm, can you hear me now? Well, apparently we can't hear each other, so that's kind of a problem. So anyway, we're going to get Malcolm McGough and Liz Ritchie. And Liz, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Liz? Yeah, okay, well, we got a little bit of a microphone problem going on here. You know, new microphones, they're the things that kind of do these things. Anyway, I'm sure that they're listening to me. I have a feeling that's happening, but I'm not getting back to them, which is another problem. But we're going to fix that. Like right now, I think we're going to fix it. So let's see what we can do here. We're going to go down and do some razzle-dazzle here in the studio, which is seems to be the thing that we're doing the most of lately, is razzle-dazzle. And it's kind of a disappointing thing to have to do so much razzle-dazzle. Anyway, so Malcolm, can you hear me now? Malcolm, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now, Malcolm? Malcolm, can you hear me now? Nothing. Crickets. This is not good for the studio. There's no question about it. Anyway, so we've got built-in, line-in, not working. How about that one? Malcolm or Liz, can you hear me now? Okay, well, we're going to have to do the social experiment. Okay, now can you hear me? Can you
hear me? I can hear you, Malcolm. This is me. This is Liz.
Malcolm, can you hear me now?
I think he's dialing in.
Okay. Well, anyway, Liz Ritchie's with us right now. And Liz Ritchie, of course, works with the New California State Movement. And Liz, we're reading about you in, you know, national publication. Shocking.
Oh, my gosh.
Shocking. You've made the national publications. And I'm sure that Malcolm will be joining us here in a second. I know we have some technological wonders with, you know, when you mix new equipment with the older equipment, sometimes it just doesn't jive. But anyway, tell us about your experience in 2016, because the article that's out there by Steve Frank right now, which is a very complimentary article of so many people and so many people that are associated in some way with New California as well. And of course, you're very deeply associated in with New California. So how did this all start for you with the Donald Trump campaign in 2016?
Well, I just kind of started getting a taste of politics in 2015. I had uncovered, I'm a water person, so I was focused in on what was going on with the tunnels and threatening the tunnels and the water, because I'm in the heart of farming right here on the side where they're going to take the water and pump it from this side, and the cost
so
that we're going to be associated.
You
got to
remember, we're
owner.
Talking to a national audience, so they don't have a point of reference. Let me give them the point of reference. You actually live in Contra Costa County, which is at one of the terminal points of the Delta region, in which you have a confluence of many rivers in the Central Valley that all come together into the Delta. And you're right there at one of the places where Jerry Brown and so many others have tried to put in tunnels to suck water out of the Delta and up and over into the Central Valley, which has been something you guys have been desperately trying to stop doing. And you've been the spearhead of that. So you've been, when you say a water person, that's what the people need to understand. That's where it's coming. You are a person who's been an activist against these kind of egregious activities by state government, which are, you know, as corrupt, especially now as we're unraveling the onion of California. We're seeing the massive amount of corruption that's going on there. So go ahead. Now you're the water person, but you know, I want to go a little bit deeper than that, because a lot of people don't understand that you've been living in the United States almost all your life, but you weren't a naturalized citizen until when?
2008.
Are you there?
Obama.
Yeah, Liz, are you there? We're hearing bell sounds in the background. Okay, well.
You know, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Go ahead. You're 2008.
I became a naturalized citizen because I wanted to make sure I could vote against Barack Obama.
And of course, you weren't. You were from Scotland originally. How many years were you here before you became a naturalized citizen? Well, we seem to have.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. No, now we can hear you. We can't hear you. Couldn't hear you before. I don't know what you're doing with your phone.
Okay. Well, I'm doing my little drive to get to the space where I can be heard correctly. Okay. Because, of course, I'm out in the country, and they also do what
so
they can.
So how many years? How many years were you here before you became a naturalized citizen?
I was here. Well, let's see. We won't do the math. But I was here probably,
a long time.
I was at that time, 50-something years.
So to fight against Barack Obama in 2008, you became a naturalized citizen. But when did you really start getting into politics at the national level? Because, you know, that's just a few years. It's only 8 years later, you know, when you jump into this.
I saw the writing on the wall. I could if you understand what socialism looks like, you understand when you start to see somebody saying things like, we're going to, you know, when he was talking to Joe the plumber and he was going to redistribute the wealth.
Right.
I mean, that's a clue. That's a big clue. What they're planning on doing is taking from the taxpayer and starting to redistribute to whomsoever. And it became apparent over the course of his tenure as president that he was redistributing our wealth out to every other country but us.
Right. And let me give some people some background, because you'd basically, because of your parents and your dad in particular, traveled many parts of the world, and you could actually see the effects of socialism.
Yeah. I've been in Czechoslovakia. I got to see... Well, I was barred from going into Czechoslovakia on a vacation when we were out vacationing and ended up in Yugoslavia and saw the absolute impoverished condition of that country. So I had visited quite a lot of the countries in the European area and got to see what the influences are, and just coming to the United States. It was always considered such an honor to be able to come here and work in this country, to get an opportunity to live in this country, because it was a land of the free and the opportunities to be able to make something of yourself, no matter what you had come from. Everybody had an opportunity. So I was privileged to be here, and I still feel you should fight to preserve what we've got.
So you picked up the banner in 2015 for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And how did all that work, and how did all that play out?
I started being very concerned about what we were doing and who was running for president. And I was just delighted when President Trump came down that escalator and started pulling back what I consider the curtain of deception of all the lies, because many of us knew we were being lied to through the media. It's just that where else were you going to go to get news? And so you're listening to the news trying to discern what's going on, but logically I could look and see what was going on and know that they were lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came down that escalator and started talking about the truth and exposing the truth, I went, there we go. I have a candidate I can fight for. I had told the Republican Party calling me on the phone for donations for this, and I had hoped that Paul Ryan was going to be somebody of integrity. I had hoped that these different people were going to be people of integrity and fight back, but they all rolled over and they were just compliant and did whatever the Democrats wanted to do. It was disgusting. So to see somebody coming down there and wanting to fight for what was right, Donald Trump became instantly my man. I mean, I was 100% sold on whatever I could do to get him elected.
And so how did you get mixed up with the Republican Party, though? That, and again, that's a story in and of itself. And but how did you get mixed up with the Republican Party?
I was part of a effort to look into what was going on here locally with what was happening in our education. I'm an educator. I was an educator for 10 years, and so I started getting involved in what was going on with my educational model here, because I could see that was not, we weren't educating kids. We were keeping them, we were teaching to the lowest common denominator, which meant your medium and higher quality students were not really learning at a faster pace. They were being slowed down so that you could teach to those students that couldn't read that well or do their math that well. So I got very involved in education. And by doing that, I got involved with people who were Republicans, and then the next thing I know, I was part of the local Republican Party here in Contra Costa.
Now the question is when you became a member of the Republican Party in Contra Costa, were things unraveling for you when you were were you seeing things that weren't necessarily correct?
Well, I literally got headaches going to their meetings, because they would argue over the minutiae of how wording was in their bylaws, but they would not rewrite the bylaws and then vote on it. No, we would go on for hours, day in and day out of these meetings, where it was just so dysfunctional, I couldn't believe that this was how they operated. There was no intent to try and get anything accomplished or to fight for a candidate, by the way.
Yeah, and you know what was kind of interesting, I think the first time you ever came to a New California State meeting, you probably saw some of the same tactics being employed by certain individuals that were on the board at the time.
Yes, there was some strategy to unravel the success.
Right, you're trying to unravel the success of the, again, that's a tactic that's mm-hmm. employed by those people that were subverting the system, and they're no longer
right.
with New California. For that very reason, you know, and again, what, you know, basically, it's a system by which, you know, they're stalling, and they've got all these different tactics that they use, and sometimes they work with people in the audience that are working to derail the whole conversation, and of course that was a problem for them. But this was happening all throughout the state, that you had these, I call them saboteurs, basically, that were destroying the Republican Party, because you know people were just wasting time and nothing was ever getting done in any of those meetings. That was the pattern for destruction, the deception. That was the pattern of destruction within the party itself that led ultimately to where we are today. There is no Republican Party in California, no California State Party. And the same with the party system in the Democrat side. I guess the bigger question, though, is that you got on board, and when was it you finally said to yourself, I'm getting away from the Republican Party because they're not supporting Donald Trump?
Well, I had the honor of being asked if I would be a part of the Trump campaign here in California. And I was still part of the Republican Party. It hadn't dawned on me that the Republican Party was actually the enemy to my candidate. I discovered that when I became part of the Trump campaign. I was met with absolute disrespect and hostility, and we were excluded from being a participant in anything to do with the Republican Party here in California.
Yeah, that's called a clue, right?
It was a big clue.
Right. And we have Malcolm with us right now. I see he's chimed in. Welcome, Malcolm. We're talking about, of course, the Steve Frank story that came out today, which features you and Liz and many others, basically because you organized. And, you know, by the way, Malcolm has been to every one of the New California State Conventions and spoke about this very issue at the very first New California State Convention, in which he told the whole story back then. This was in 2000. Man, it's already 2018 you told the story. That's pretty amazing. July of 2018. Long time ago. Long, long time ago. So, Malcolm, welcome.
It seems like that. Thanks, mate. It seems like only yesterday. And thanks for getting me up so early in the morning.
Well, you needed to get up. Look, you know, I'm up. You got to be up. That's the rule, right? So, how did you get involved with the campaign for Trump?
Yeah, in February 2016, I traveled up to Massachusetts from Connecticut and joined the campaign, and was very pleased to be invited to go down to South Carolina, then Texas, then Wisconsin, Cleveland, Ohio, and back to Connecticut, West Virginia. And after West Virginia, the people that brought me on board resigned because of Paul Manafort coming on board. So I had nobody to sponsor me. And I went back to Connecticut and was so bored, I decided to travel to California to help out with the San Diego rally. It was a veterans rally. And being a veteran myself, I was asked by one of the guys that was running it. And then when I arrived in San Diego, they said they needed somebody to run the Anaheim Women's Rally in Anaheim. And so I was asked to run that. And then they asked me to run the Sacramento Rally. And after the Sacramento Rally, we went up to Redding. And it was there that I was asked to be the political director on staff with the campaign for California.
And, you know, this is quite a story because you're from Australia, and
yes.
You were actually in the the Australian military as an officer.
Yeah, I had 25 years in the military in Australia, retiring as a lieutenant colonel. But I came to America, I lived in Connecticut for 8 years and ran several campaigns in Connecticut before joining the Trump campaign. But I knew from the day he came down the escalator, I think it was the 15th of July in 2015, I knew that he was going to be the next president of the United States.
Well, you know, you and Trevor Loudon, kind of in the same circle, that you understand what socialism and communism look like, as does Trevor. And, of course, Trevor spoke at our 5th Constitutional Convention. He was the speaker there. And he's got the books out about the enemies within and the whole series that he's got going on. And he's wildly popular from that standpoint. But you both are saying the same message that it looks like communism, socialism is really taking a footing here, and you're really sort of you guys are soldiers from really and other nations that are on board to try and stop that.
Yeah, I really believe that. Without America, the world's done. America, to me, is the beacon of hope and light for the rest of the world to look to. And at the moment, there's a whole host of people from within that want to bring America back to the secular pact. And it's a pact that she was never meant to be part of. She always was meant to be that beacon of hope. And without America, my country is gone as well. Then New Zealand, then Canada, if Canada hasn't already gone, then England. And the West is done. So... as goes America, so goes the world. And as goes California, so goes America. So we've got to save California as well. Without California, we're in trouble.
Yeah. And, of course, they all know that, too, on the other team. That's why they destroyed the California Republican GOP and actually destroyed the Democratic Party as well. I mean, the argument that we make in New California is that there's no political system in California anymore. And of course, why would you need one if you're a dictator, right?
Exactly. And when I say California, New California is the way to go. It's the future here, and they are going to be the organization, your organization, that brings the East Coast back to America. The West Coast back to America.
Yeah, I think, well, it's pretty, to me it's obvious. I see it. I'm glad you're, we welcome your participation. And, of course, Liz has been definitely actively involved in what's going on for New California. And we have a long ways to go, but, it's interesting to see how this whole thing is unfolding right now, especially as we get closer and closer. Now, California Republicans are not going to have a convention, which I think is pretty interesting. And to me, like I was saying before in the last hour, it's prima facie evidence that there is no California Republican Party. Would you agree?
Yeah, apart from the fact that they haven't got any money, I don't think there's going to be a lot of support for the current chair of the California Republican Party. It's just dysfunctional. And Steve Frank mentions it often. I mean, the Democrat Party is out registering Republicans here in California. I think something about 3.5-1. Is that right, Liz?
That's about right. I remember seeing that they were touting that they had been registering about 140,000, and there's over 400,000 in the same time frame for the Democrat Party.
Yeah, so it's about 3.5-1, and you can't keep a party going if you're being outregistered 3.5-1.
Yeah, and that's going to be a problem, obviously, but. Your technique and what you did in 2016, when you had masses of people that were, you know, wildly in love with Donald Trump, basically, that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, this is the thing that I impart upon people from our position with New California, is that, and I've had the catbird seat for months now, for 2 years, of people calling all throughout the state. I've visited all 58 counties. And town halls all over the place, and we continue to travel, and we continue to do the good work of New California. But my sense of it is, if you take the no party preferences or the decline to state, and take the Republican Party, and you take a look at the nature of California, you have about 70% decline to state and Republican, and about 30% others, including Democratic Party. There is such a big mass of people that would be willing to be in the GOP, but they say no for the same reasons everybody else that we know says no. They've seen the charade and the sham that has gone through. So, but there's no other party out there or no other direction for them to go to or to turn to.
You're exactly right. But not only that, there's about 25 million eligible voters here in California, and only about 13 million that participate at any given time. So you've got about 11, 12 million people that are just not engaged in politics here in America, or in California, I should say. And that's one of the most disappointing things about what I see here in California and America generally, that the Founding Fathers gave you people a gift to participate in the greatest constitutional republic the world's ever seen, and yet we just ignore it. We just don't value that vote. And if people were engaged, we wouldn't have a problem here in California. If the evangelical Christians would get out and vote biblical values, and they can go to biblicalvalues.com, and they will see that there is no way a evangelical Christian could vote for a Democrat candidate. The platforms are diametrically opposed to the Christian values. And I would really encourage people to have a look at that biblicalvalues.com and just address these questions. How could you ever vote for a party that espouses a third trimester abortion and even abortion or the death, killing of a baby after it's born?
Yeah.
if the mother's intent was to abort that baby? It just makes no sense. So evangelicals out there, go look up biblicalvalues.com and just ask yourself that question. How could you vote for a person or a president or a candidate that has a platform of killing babies in the third trimester?
Yeah, it's a really, you know, we try to make this point that Nancy Pelosi is a party of abortion, of child sex trafficking, of illegal foreign nationals, of violence, of feces in the street with needles and urine. Just to say a few things about her in a complimentary fashion, I mean, how could anybody vote for that? It just, to me, is absolutely insane.
Come on. She likes all of the great ice cream.
Yeah.
That
must be the ice cream.
I want to see the gourmet ice cream.
Right. It must be the ice cream. But I wanted to talk for a second here, Malcolm. If you take a look at what's going on in 2020, shaping up for California, you've got a number of things happening. You got the New California movement. You got Steve Franks trying to pull something together with conservative values and some sort of a system, if you will, of a Republican Party. It's kind of like a good time to actually come up with a new system altogether and a new party, perhaps. And that's what we're doing in New California, as you know. We're trying to put back together, because sort of our mandate, not to be Republican or Democrat or whatever, supporting one particular party, our function is to provide for a Republican form of government, which is what the Constitution says we have to do. And to me, I look at the new California landscape as a target-rich environment for opportunities for all parties, but in particular, the ones that are, well, both parties, the Republican and Democrats, because they've been so destroyed. You would think that people naturally would want to participate in that environment where you have a new state, new concepts, and be more inclined to come on board there.
Absolutely. I think we forget sometimes that Democrats and Republicans, or the people of America, were formed out of one vision, and that is to create a Republican form of government. The only difference between Democrats and Republicans is really that Hamilton was a big government guy, and Jefferson was a small government guy. But they still had the same belief systems. They had the same faith in God. They had the same desire to create a representative government. And we've moved away from that, such that the Democrats and the Republicans now represent their party rather than the people that from the districts from which they come. And I think that's a major failure in our government system that we have at the moment, that no longer are the congressional candidates representing the people, they're representing their own party. And to me, that's a real failing.
Yeah. So, Liz, when you were involved with the party, how did you get involved directly? When did you cross that Rubicon to get involved with the politics of the Trump campaign?
Well, I started working with Californians for Trump, which was a Facebook page, and the brilliance of it was that they were putting together a volunteer base to be able to support Trump, because there was nothing happening in the state of California to put together a support team. So actually the whole effort for Trump in 2016 in California was based on volunteers. Even the people in the leadership were volunteers, including Malcolm. He was a volunteer. And we organized probably the most effective form of getting the state to represent Trump from the top all the way down to the bottom. We had a complete structure of management within the system, plus created a database from the Californians for Trump that was handed over. That was a starting point, and then built upon that to, Malcolm, about 330,000 people that were volunteers for the Trump campaign in California?
Yeah, that's correct, Liz. Those 330,000 weren't all active at the same time, Paul, but whenever we needed a boost to our ground game, we would just put an email out through the Nation Builder that had those 330,000 people on it, and overnight we would get 2,000 or 3,000 emails volunteering to do what we had asked through that email. It was just a remarkable system. As we said, we had a statewide organization, and that organization was built from the 3rd of June, when the primary finished, to the end of the convention. We established 6 regional managers, 14 coalition directors, 42 county captains, and 517 city leaders across the state. It was just a remarkable effort by all in the team. And my kudos goes to people like Liz, who were the regional managers, and they did a remarkable job. You know, Rachel Gunther, who was also mentioned in the article today, Woody Woodrum. I mean, just remarkable effort from the top down.
You know, Malcolm, I was thinking about how the volunteers really, we mobilized the effort here and captured the hearts and souls and minds of people who were really not political people. They were the people that want change. And I truly believe that Trump won California, but for the voter fraud and the massive amount of voter fraud coming out of Los Angeles County, for instance. What was there, several million voters there that they can't account for people? They're registered, yeah, but the people don't exist, right?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that also Linda Payne and Ruth Wise of Election Integrity would not really dispute it hotly, but the voter fraud was replete, and of course that really played out big time when they went with when they legalized between 2016 and 2018, the voter harvesting process, which we saw the complete debacle of the Republicans in California, which, by the way, when Newsom won the election, he was pontificating that he was going to wipe out all Republicans in the next election, meaning 2020, because he knew he had voter fraud all over. I mean, he's had legalized voter fraud in ballot harvesting. And, of course, they had the whole system of accounting, and then they had all the dead players out there, people voting from the grave business. But, you know, that's all, a lot of that's been kind of blown up here. But I want to go back to that whole thing about the voter fraud in 2016 that had that – you take that out of the equation. I say the same thing about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. See, I've forgotten her already. I know, how could we forget? The voter fraud that took place in the primary was just absolutely obvious. And now I think there's a little bit more scrutiny. How do you think this is going to play out in California based upon what you're seeing right now, Malcolm?
Look, voter fraud is rampant here in California and in fact, across the country, despite the naysayers from the other side. I was involved with the Election Integrity Project for nearly 18 months, and I saw it with my own eyes, the voter fraud, bags of mail ballots in mail bags that never got to the county registrars. You've only got to look at the places like Massachusetts, where people have said that Massachusetts will never ever. Sorry, not Massachusetts, New Hampshire. New Hampshire will never ever again go red. Well, in 2016, President Trump lost New Hampshire by 2,000 votes. And after the results were finalized, 5,000 illegal votes were found in New Hampshire, which would have given him New Hampshire as well. So it is rampant, and I've seen it with my own eyes.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're going to do.
You mentioned something, and I'm going to go back to Liz on this, that you've worked at the polls and during the elections. In fact, I think you were in the last election, and you saw in 2018 in that cycle. You saw that same thing where ballots weren't even picked up and tabulated. They never even got into the mix to determine whether or not they would be tabulated. And I think that's one of the big tactics that they have, is that those areas that they know are conservative, they just don't pick up the ballots.
Well, we didn't have ours picked up. Where I worked was, so I live in a conservative area. We're a farming community here, a little historical town nestled in amongst a very
right.
blue county. But anyhow, I worked at the polls, and we weren't even closed. We still had people voting when they started calling the election. I'm going, wait a minute. The polls aren't even closed here in our county, and I know that means that they're not closed across the state, but somehow they're managing to call the election.
Yeah,
so Gavin Newsom was our governor, with 9% of the precincts having reported, and he wasn't even in the lead. I'm going, how does this happen?
The way it happened was Chris Steigerwalt from Fox News, 90 minutes before the polls closed, called it. 90 minutes. Chris Steigerwalt, remember that, Fox News, ladies and gentlemen. And people were absolutely outraged. And, of course, then after that, and again, what they have is they have ballot harvesting. And then they have, you know, basically, what is it? They fallow the land by not picking up the ballots from conservative areas to be tabulated. It's a twofold system.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking. Right back at me. It's shocking. Go ahead, Malcolm.
I was just going to say, one of the disappointments I have about the Republican Party, and there are many here in California, and right across the country, for that matter. But one of the big disappointments I have is the fact that they don't push back on these outrageous regulations that come out, or laws that come out. Ballot harvesting is one of the key requirements of a ballot, is that it's traceable back to the individual. And you can't trace them back. If you ballot harvest, you've got no legal trace back to the individual voter. And the Republican Party didn't raise an eyebrow when they first put this in the system of politics here in California. And
Shocking.
And there's so many opportunities where a Republican chair can put out a press release, or presser as you call them. And I haven't seen any press releases from the Republican Party since I've been here 3 years.
Shocking.
Well, you know, that's called a telltale sign of what's really going on. And they've never objected to it. I think they've kind of done some whimpering because people like yourself and myself and everybody else is saying, where are you guys on this? Well, maybe we should say it's probably not a good idea. That's a, you know, it's the weak response is worse than no response, if you know what I mean. And that's what we've been seeing from them. And again, there should, if a healthy, happy Republican Party was there, they would have the money available to sue the state over that and stop it. I mean, and that's what really needs to happen.
I totally agree. But they just don't seem to have the will, and they certainly don't have the money to do that now. And now that Munger is out of the picture, the money's just drying up.
Well, that was the kind of money that he was bringing, you know, money from, here you are, have the Republican Party, and the SEIU is the biggest funder for the Republican Party. That's called another tell. I mean, that's a big clue right there. And this is the kind of stuff that people nationally just, this is the exposure that they've never seen before, and how really it was an uphill battle for Donald Trump. In California, it's still an uphill battle for Donald Trump in California because of all the things. All these things are still there, but the only thing that's going to, I think, bring it about to where it's going to be a fair and square fight is New California. That's the only opportunity.
I tend to agree with you. New California is a key for Californians to get their vote back and get their voice back here on the West Coast.
Yeah, and you know, it's a shocker that, you know, that we support the president in terms of myself, but not New California per se, because we can't. But what the shocker is that we're going to get the vote back for everybody. You know, that's the key thing. You said it. That, you know, I always throw this out as a theoretical, but if you take and erase the D in front of everybody's names in the legislature that are D's and put in R's, I don't think you'd get a different form of government than the totalitarian one that we have now. It'd be the same, because Republicans would behave just exactly the same way with all the accoutrements of what all the totalitarians have always brought to the table when they have a monoparty system.
Absolutely, and talking about the tells, as you call it, Chad Mays abstaining from voting when the vote for Trump on the ballot was put forward by the Democrats. He abstained. That tells me everything I need to know about the Republican Party here in California.
Yeah, and then of course he sat in with all the Greens, went with the gas tax and all that stuff. And that's when you have Republicans like that, you don't even need enemies.
Exactly right.
You can get rid of the enemies. So what's it going to look like now from, as you sit and look at this and look at the field as it sits right now for Trump and the campaign going forward in 2020 in California?
That, for me, was that
cool? Yeah.
Yeah. Look, before this economic meltdown from the coronavirus, I said that Trump would win in a landslide. I still think he's going to win big time, but the Democrats will use this coronavirus and blame it on Trump. They will blame the collapse of the economy on Trump. But the bottom line is this: if Trump hadn't built the economy up to where it was breaking records every day, up to around 30,000, then this coronavirus would have collapsed America completely and put it into a depression. And the fact that we had enough fat in the economic system is tantamount to Trump's leadership, and because of that, he will still win big time.
Well, you know, the other element that's coming into play now is that the fat might be getting a little bit depleted. And one of the things that was brought up last night by several of the New Californians and also other sources have been telling me this over the weeks that shipping has really started to taper off. And shipping meaning the truckers moving product from the factories and from the fields and so on into the stores. And right now they're seeing big, big strains on the supply chain. And many truckers are now estimating that they've been told that there's only 2 weeks' supply of anything to truck around. So we should be seeing that come to a standstill, which means food won't be in the stores anymore. Like some of your big box places have a lot of stuff, but that's going to quickly disappear, I suspect. When this sort of thing starts to happen, what does it look like for the election going forward at all?
Well, I still believe that Trump will win. Because the people's eyes are being opened up
right
to the corruption of the Democrats. Now, the people are at home, and they are researching, they're investigating, and they're starting to see for themselves just what side of the politics is corrupt. And it's not only the Democrats, but it's some Republicans as well. And they're seeing that, and because of that, Trump will be reelected.
Yeah,
I think it's mobilizing. I think we're mobilizing people. The people are getting to sit and actually pay attention to what's going on there, and they're losing everything. They're losing their livelihood. They're losing their everything that they've accumulated in life. And you're going to question that. What is the real source of that problem? And you look at the, just the complete lack of effort by the Democrat Party to solve any problems. In fact, they throw roadblocks in to try and prevent money getting to the pockets of the people that need it. So then you see all these big companies and schools, you know, colleges taking advantage of the financial, what should be a boost to our middle class and small businesses, taking advantage of that and siphoning off money that should be going to help the economy stay at least stable. So I really truly believe that the state of California, the people are going to mobilize against what's going on. The Democrats are about to get a black eye, both fists are flying, because people aren't going to stand for this. We've been leaving in droves. People are leaving trying to find opportunities throughout the country, and instead they're being brought to the same grinding halt that we're experiencing here in California. But we can see with this Democrat Party that's here and the Republican Party that's here, the politics in the state is completely sold out to the communist Chinese. We don't have a party that's representing the people anymore. We are under the mercy of what they've been doing to manage our finances, going out to host a country that absolutely detests and hates the state, but also the United States. So I hope that we see the same kind of mobilization we saw in 2016 for Trump, but that it's magnified by things like the evangelicals, by the small businesses, by people not being party specific, but that this isn't a party fight. This is a fight between socialism, communism, and our freedom. And we need to all step up to this and realize we're losing our freedom. And that's what's the most important and passionate part for me, is that they're coming after my freedoms. I can't even go out and speak without a mask on. Yet Nancy Pelosi can stand there and speak without a mask on. I don't quite understand that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Malcolm.
And this is no longer about Democrats and Republicans and independents. This is about America and socialism and just a corrupt system of government. And the American people have got time now to sit back and think about and research what's happened in this country the last 70 years. I mean, you go back to 1947 when the separation of church and state was put forward by was ruled by the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, there was never, ever an intent from the Founding Fathers to have a separation of church from state, only state from church.
Right, that's correct.
They knew that the church or the Judeo-Christian principles or system was absolutely necessary for this country, this new country, to kind of thrive. And they wanted the Judeo-Christian principles to be embedded in every aspect of our lives, our families, our churches, our government at all level. And yet it's slowly but surely being removed. And you know, Trump is, President Trump is bringing those principles back into back to where we can see them again. And he's starting to change things. I mean, you've only got to look at the way he conducts his businesses. He has prayer before every meeting that he has now. He voices his belief in God and Christ every opportunity he gets. He's the only president that I know of in recent times, and I remember I've only been here for about 11 years now, but I can't ever remember a president giving a Easter message from the White House. He has done that every year since he's been in power. And slowly but surely, you're getting a change in the top part of our administration. I mean, you've got Bible study being conducted in the White House and in departments right across the administration. So slowly but surely, I think that we are opening our eyes to what has happened this last 70 years, where the enemies within, as Trevor Loudon would say, they've been destroying this country from within, and trying to bring it back to a secular pack of countries, and open its borders and become just like Europe, and the people are awake.
How's that working out for Europe?
and you look at what happened during this coronavirus. Countries across Europe have closed their borders because they realised that they couldn't manage the coronavirus across the whole of Europe. They had to close their borders to protect themselves. So I see that we are slowly but surely opening our eyes to what God put in place. And it was mentioned in the Bible. I mean, in Acts 17:26, and I'll paraphrase here, he says that from one man he created all the nations for a time and for certain borders. We've destroyed that concept in Europe and across many countries in the world. I mean, just opening our borders, and that's exactly what they want to do here in America, open the borders to a new world order. And thankfully, I think this coronavirus is going to stop that from occurring.
Yeah, it's definitely put the brakes. Liz, final thoughts, because we're running out of time, believe it or not.
Well, I just appreciate that we've had the opportunity to be able to talk about this, but I want to just point people to the fact that if you have a heart to get involved with this, Malcolm's talking about how he's going to be heading up the grassroots Trump organization. There isn't really anything going on with the Republican Party, but you can always get a hold of us through New California State. Join into that movement, and we're going to be looking for ways to be able to support a new state that's going to give you a new constitution, new laws, take away the regulations, and start upholding the constitution from its original intent. So this is really a way for you to be able to get involved in turning things around and stop this corruption, because we've got to take away the power from the people that are corrupting and destroying us from within. So that's my final words on that.
Great.
And Malcolm, I'm sure you want to be able to make sure that they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, we have about 15 seconds. So.
Yeah, look, all I can say is that I believe America is coming back. America's eyes are being opened, and if you want to get in contact with me, just go to mcgoughms@outlook.com, mcgoughms@outlook.com.
Actually, it's actually in the article. But listen, Liz Ritchie and Malcolm McGough, thank you very much for being with us on Agenda 21 Radio. We'll definitely have you on again, and thanks for all your support. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to Agenda 21 Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay with us. We've got another hour to go here. And remember, stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.